Safety is communities allowing themselves to define what safety is to them in a way that doesn't involve police, crime, violence, or punishment.
What you see immediately following the atomic bombing in the Black community, artists, activists, journalists, writers, all coming together to protest Truman's decision to use nuclear weapons.
UAE can stop this slaughter. They can stop Green Mile from killing more animals. They can stop the exploitation of African lands. And they can stop running over the Maasai people. The UAE government, the embassy, everyone here in this building can put an end to the slaughter.
And welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averm. Well, this week, important history was made with the release of the first platform by the Movement for Black Lives. We'll be talking to organizers on the ground about that. Also, as I speak, hundreds of Black and Hispanic journalists are meeting here in D.C. We'll speak to a media veteran, Akili Ramses, about the state of people of color in corporate media. And after the burn, or the afterburn, what local organizers who supported Senator Bernie Sanders for president are doing now. So as always, we have a jam-packed show for you. We'll start with our headlines. The Black Lives Matter movement, which has been criticized for a lack of cohesive vision or a strategy, has released a detailed platform endorsed by dozens of key organizations and organizers around the country. The platform is divided into six key elements. 1, end the war on black people. 2, reparations. 3, invest in safety, divest from harm. 4, economic justice. 5, community control. And 6, political power. The platform was released as several of these endorsing groups continued with demonstrations and actions around the country. This week for the death of a Baltimore single mother, Corrin Gaines, who was shot to death in her home after police arrived with a summons about a traffic violation. Also in other Black Lives Matter news, a disturbing video has surfaced of a jailed woman in Kentucky who was refused pants by the jail and was sent to court without pants. And in a rare, if not unheard of, ruling in Louisiana, a federal judge has ordered a coroner's office not to publicly release the autopsy report on the death of Alton Sterling. And President Obama commuted the sentences of 214 federal prisoners on Wednesday. Almost all of those released had been convicted of nonviolent drug crimes. To date, Obama has commuted the sentences of 562 federal inmates, more than the previous 9 presidents combined. On Tuesday, activists across the country held a series of events called Night Out for Safety and Liberation. In D.C., more than 200 people gathered at the Perch on Georgia Avenue in Northwest D.C., human rights activists, including Black Youth Project 100, Black Lives Matter DC, and the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, said the action was designed to redefine the conversation around public safety. Coming together under the hashtag Safety Is, participants were invited to have complimentary dinner, watch free performances, color, paint, get Reiki healing, shop with vendors, and answer the question Safety Is and My Truth Is on a large mural and on video. Here are some comments posted, beginning with April Goggins, core organizer for Black Lives Matter DC.
Safety is communities allowing themselves to define what safety is to them in a way that doesn't involve police, crime, violence, or punishment.
Safety just simply means freedom to protect my body, protect my family, and freedom to really explore, worship, and do as I feel fit, without feeling in danger to any of those things.
Safety is the ability to be yourself in your own skin, in your own voice, in your own heart, and not have to compromise that for anything or fear that that will somehow make you a target.
The Night Out for Safety and Liberation coincided with the National Night Out, during which neighborhoods across the nation foster good relations between police and the community. In D.C., the Metropolitan Police Department partnered with community groups to host events in every ward, but respecting the goal of Night Out for Safety and Liberation, uniformed police officers kept their distance a block away from the Georgia Avenue event. Queen Lynn from Million Hoodies explained what her organization is all about to participants.
So Million Hoodies is a social justice organization. We focus on ways in which we can make our communities a safe space and a safe place. Black lives, we focus on mass incarceration, gun violence, things of that nature. We're currently building a rally to support black-owned businesses. And we're asking folks, if you have a black-owned business or if you know someone who has one, to email us and contact us. We want to highlight all of the black-owned businesses in this area.
You can get more information about Million Hoodies from millionhoodiesdcchapter@gmail.com. More on the Movement for Black Lives platform later in the show. Tomorrow is the 71st anniversary of the United States dropping nuclear bombs on the Japanese islands of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, killing more than 200,000 people during or within 3 months after the bombing. Here in D.C., there will be a Hiroshima peace commemoration today, Friday, August 5th, 6:45 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, hosted by the Hiroshima-Nagasaki Peace Committee of the National Capital Area. And on tomorrow, Saturday, August 6th, the organization Global Zero is sponsoring Bike Around the Bomb, beginning at 10 a.m. at Lafayette Park, 16th Street and Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, across from the White House. Participants will cycle around what would be the edge of a nuclear blast in downtown D.C. and call on the 2016 presidential candidates to commit to a world without nuclear weapons. Bike Around the Bomb events are being held in 40 cities around the world, but the D.C. event is the largest. For more information, visit globalzero.org. Also marking this grim anniversary was an author's talk this week. Chantel James has more.
Vincent J. Ntande, an associate professor of African American history at Montgomery College and director of research at the Nuclear Studies Institute of the American University in Washington, D.C., spoke at the Potter's House on Tuesday, August 7th about his new book, African Americans Against the Bomb. Ntande's talk focused on the activism from the African-American community around nuclear disarmament and anti-nuclear weapons. He spoke of the work that luminaries such as Paul Robeson, Malcolm X, and Lorraine Hansberry have done against the bomb, as well as of the activism of ordinary citizens. He illuminated the ways in which the struggle for racial equality and the struggle against nuclear weapons are connected.
My book focuses on those black activists in the United States that consistently connected the fight for freedom and equality in the U.S. with nuclear disarmament and liberation movements around the world. And when the U.S. dropped the first atomic bomb August 6, 1945, 71 years ago, instantly killing 140,000 people, most of the American public rejoiced. In fact, Gallup ran a poll a week later that showed that 85% of the American public agreed with Truman's decision to use nuclear weapons. 22% in a Rover poll the same week said they wished that Japan hadn't surrendered, so we could have dropped more nuclear weapons and killed more people. And in fact, no poll up until late October of 1945 ever showed more than 4.5% of the respondents critical of Truman's decision. And this was because in this country, after Pearl Harbor, we created a genocidal race hatred against the Japanese that we really haven't spent. It's unparalleled, worse than anything we even saw towards people of Middle Eastern descent after 9/11. General Joseph Stilwell wrote to his wife, when I think about how these bowlegged cockroaches of Roonberg Khan lies, it makes me want to wrap Jap guts around every lamppost in Asia. A motto of the Marines was, remember Pearl Harbor, keep them dying. And so if you look at the pictures and newspapers and cartoons and commercials of the Japanese at this time, they were always depicted as being less than human, of vermin and apes and monkeys and rats. And why? Because if you make a group of people less than human, it's easier to commit violence against them. And of course, we did this with slavery and African Americans. We do this with the Middle East. We did this during Vietnam, over and over again with non-white people to make them less than human. And if you go back and look during World War II, we were very careful not to do this with Germans or Italians. We separate Nazis from Germans, from fascists from Italians, but not Japan. They were all guilty for Pearl Harbor. But this wasn't the case in the black community. And now, of course, nothing's monolithic, but many in the black community already had an affinity for the Japanese people for various reasons. People forget that it was the Japanese that in 1935, when Italy Mussolini invaded Ethiopia, it was the Japanese that publicly came out and said they were going to come to the defense of the Ethiopian people. And African Americans in this country knew that. Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois, had already visited Japan, and he was lionized there and came back and wrote about the Japanese people. Of course, there was Japanese internment. There were many in the black community that said, here's a group of people that were put in concentration camps in this country, not for any crime they committed, but simply because of their race. This could happen to us. So some of this was an already built-in affinity. And so what you see immediately following the atomic bombing in the black community is, before there was any organized anti-nuclear movement, artists and activists and journalists and writers all coming together to protest Truman's decision to use nuclear weapons.
This is Chantal James for On the Ground, signing off.
In culture and media news from D.C. this week, protesters gathered outside the embassy of the United Arab Emirates to rally against the trophy hunting company Green Mile. In 2014, Green Mile Safari produced a video which provoked international outrage with graphic images of employees and guests engaging in criminal behavior and mistreating African wildlife. Afterward, Green Mile lost its access to Tanzanian wildlife preserves, but recent reports from Tanzania indicate that officials charged with protecting the country's natural resources will now allow Green Mile Safari to return to protected land. And these reports immediately sparked controversy and a recent protest at the Tanzanian embassy before this week's protest at the UAE embassy.
We are here today to ask the United Arab Emirates to stop Green Mile. Green Mile is a safari company owned and controlled by senior members of the UAE government. They can stop the slaughter. Green Mile is on videotape slaughtering African animals in Tanzanian reserves. They treat animals with such disgust they don't deserve back into Tanzanian land. UAE can stop this slaughter. They can stop Green Mile from killing more animals. They can stop the exploitation of African lands. And they can stop running over the Maasai people. The UAE government, the embassy, everyone here in this building can put an end to the slaughter. That's why we are here to say, UAE, stop Green Mile!
UAE, stop Green Mile!
Thank you.
UAE, stop Green Mile!
My name is Ayana Mackins. I'm a teacher here in D.C. If you're going to use the term ecotourism, safari, but at the same time you're using that as a mask to hide murder and destruction, I can only imagine the type of damage that these vehicles are doing to the land as they run over animals, which is a prohibited activity, you know. Using these machines to then use another machine to gun down these animals in excess of using them for nutrition or using them for any other purpose that could advance anything healthy. You know, this is entertainment. This is your tourist attraction, to kill, to come to these areas and kill, not to build, not to plant, not to nurture, not to cultivate, but to come to African spaces and kill. That's just absolutely wrong.
Kimone Freeman of We Act Radio, who was one of the organizers of the action, said in a social media post, Michael Vick hosted dogfights and went to prison, but wealthy people can do what they want in Africa, just don't touch their dogs. In other culture and media news, the Olympics get underway in Rio de Janeiro today. Gregory Porter, The Roots, Jill Scott, and Kindred the Family Soul are among the artists who will take the stage this weekend at the Summer Spirit Festival at the Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. And the novelist, essayist, poet, playwright, and social critic James Baldwin would have been 92 years old this week on August 1st. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, the Movement for Black Lives releases its platform. Stay with us.
I will rise. says the skin that I'm in. I love the texture of my hair.
The texture of my hair.
And I will rock it everywhere.
That was Jonathan Likes of BYP 100 DC leading the crowd and song at the Night Out for Safety and Liberation here in Washington, D.C., one of dozens of similar events held around the country this week. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, this week, important history was made with the release of the first platform by the Movement for Black Lives. The Black Lives Matter movement had been criticized by some for a lack of cohesive vision or strategy, and they've released this detailed platform endorsed by dozens of key organizations and organizers. The platform is divided into six key demands. 1, end the war on black people. 2, reparations. 3, invest in safety. Divest from harm. 4, economic justice. 5, community control. And 6, political power. Well, with me to discuss the new platform are two guests, Janae Bonsu, National Public Policy Chair of BYP 100. Good morning, Janae.
Good morning. Good morning.
And thank you for joining me. And also on the line is a labor organizer here in the D.C. area, Jeremiah Lowry. Good morning, Jeremiah. Well, I think that Jeremiah will be with us. I hear some noise there in the background. Jeremiah Lowry is an activist here in Washington. He works on issues related to environmental justice, creating solar co-ops in the city, universal child care, and public transparency. And that's with DC for Democracy. Good morning, Jeremiah. Are you there with us?
Good morning. How's it going?
Okay, good. All right. So I'll start with you, Janae. I noticed that maybe because of the release of the platform that there's a refocus even in the name of the movement. I know that a lot of people who cover it and are a part of it we've been calling it the Movement for Black Lives for a while, but most of the public calls it the Black Lives Matter movement. Is that kind of shift or a re-emphasis intentional?
It is important to understand and distinguish the fact that, you know, Black Lives Matter was an important hashtag and political demand and assertion of what is true, right? And that kind of birthed the Black Lives Matter, the network, an organization that has, groups or chapters across the country. But at the same time, I think it's easy to conflate Black Lives Matter, the network, with the many, many, many different organizations that are operating and working within this movement. And so I think that it is important to distinguish the Movement for Black Lives as a united front of several is an understatement, Black-led organizations across the country that are all dedicated to freedom, liberation, justice. It's just important to distinguish that Black Lives Matter, the network, is a part of that large movement. So it's definitely intentional, but...
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. There's a lot of movement around, and I don't know whether it's you or Jeremiah, but we're just picking up a lot of noise in addition to your voice. So, also, Janae, I noticed that the platform is very comprehensive, and perhaps this ties into what you were just saying, that even though police killings are unacceptable and will be resisted, that this platform addresses a whole series of other issues that, in addition to the police brutality and violence, it addresses economic violence, it addresses a whole range of issues where black lives are being threatened.
Absolutely. This platform consists of 40 really comprehensive and visionary policy demands that extend beyond the killing of black people, because we understand that our daily lives are not focused or centered around police violence. Although it's a very important and devastating phenomenon that impacts a lot of folks that share our skin, we also experience state violence in many other forms, including the schools that criminalize our children, to the poisoning of our water. It's just so many things that affect us that we have to transform and repair. You know, our lives are under attack in the way that the U.S. invests and divests from, invest in our punishment and divest from the things that actually keep us safe. So we have to really be intentional about attacking all of those harmful systems and really building the world that we want to live in.
And one more question specifically for you, Janae, is about, does the platform market change in the non-hierarchical way that the Movement for Black Lives has functioned? I know this is kind of a coalition effort, but how will the new platform affect how organizations relate to each other in the movement?
Mm-hmm. I think just even the process of how this platform came together is a reflection of collaboration and cooperation and working together within the movement. If one could imagine a process, a year-long participatory process of between 40 and 60 Black-led organizations across the country coming to a table to discuss what are the economic goals, the policy goals that we need to put together and research and write and put out into the world to put forth the destiny that we're trying to reach in terms of political and economic power. That is not an easy process. You know, I'm really happy that we've gotten to the point where, you know, it's still not a perfect document, right? It's not even fully exhaustive, but it's definitely comprehensive and clearly defines the policies and organizing tactics and resources to advance Black liberation. But it is reflective of a collaboration and shared vision of many organizations that at every single point along the way didn't agree, but was willing to engage in principled ideological struggle to get to a point where we can present a united front as a movement that is dedicated to working together for our collective liberation. And so that process alone is reflective of our politic, and this platform itself should be used and is meant to be used for other organizations and other individuals and activists to work together and to use this as a tool.
Now, Jeremiah, you work here in D.C. on issues related to environmental justice, creating solar co-ops in the city, universal child care, and public transparency. I mean, as an activist on the ground here in D.C., how do you react to the new platform released by the Movement for Black Lives in terms of its breadth and kind of expanding away from the singular, though, you know, horrific, you know, fact of police murder? How do you react to it?
I thought it was, you know, I read through, you know, a little bit of the platform. I still have a lot more to take a look at, but I thought it was pretty awesome. You know, I thought it was well put together, and it looked at so many issues facing Black people in general, right? Besides for just like police brutality, it covered economic issues, it covered some foreign policy issues. You know, it talked about you know, income and, you know, labor and, you know, all these different issues affecting Black people on a day-to-day basis. You know, even talked about trade deals and stuff of that nature. So. And also immigration as well. And so, you know, I love that aspect of it, the fact that they covered so many different issues that are so relevant today. And, yeah, you know, and also environmental issues, too. And so, I was really, you know, excited to read the platform. You know, I still have so much to look at, but so far, so good. It was you know, it looked like it was a process, you know, as my friend mentioned over the phone, that, you know, brought so many different people to the table who work on so many different issues concerning Black people. So
would, Janae, would an organization like DC for Democracy, would they be able to endorse? I saw online, I know I endorsed it as an individual and endorsed it for the radio show, and organizations can endorse the platform?
Absolutely.
And individuals.
We want everyone to engage with the platform. So as you said, you can endorse or sign on to the platform as an individual or as an organization. And there's other ways to get involved as well. We'll be hosting a series of online events that'll allow for us to engage in conversations as a movement about how to make our vision a reality. And I've also created a digital space on policy, dc4democracy.m4bl.org, where folks can share their existing work. So DC for Democracy definitely has a space to share their existing work and plug into work to find to fight for the dignity and power of our people. So absolutely, there's many ways to plug in.
And I think that's the website I went to was themovementforblacklives.org, or is it just movementforblacklives.org?
The website for the platform is at policy.m4bl.org. So that is the website that folks should go to plug in.
Okay. Now, just a couple more questions. I know that there's this kind of reactionary movement being promoted called the so-called Blue Lives Matter movement. And I guess will more cohesion among the organizations allow them to, I guess, confront these not only continued killings, but this kind of reactionary movement to counter the movement for Black Lives? There are laws in several states pending that will almost criminalize demonstrations and any type of what they consider an assault on the police.
Yeah, there's a myth that police are a vulnerable group of people that, you know, in this Blue Lives Matter wave of legislation seeking to consolidate state and corporate power and increase the criminalization and surveillance of our people, which is why we're seeking transformative policies that reallocate power in our communities and respect our dignity. We're very full aware as a movement what they're trying to do with this legislation. And so, you know, as a part of our platform, particularly in the political power section, we're demanding an end to the criminalization of Black political activity. From Jasmine of BLM to the protesters in St. Louis, we demand the right to organize, to protest, and to fight for our humanity and dignity. And so there's, on its face, you know, Blue Lives Matter bills are, you know, adding police officers as a protected class under hate crime legislation, which is problematic in and of itself. Being a police officer is an occupation, it's not an identity. But there are really problematic ways that can play out on the ground in practice at protests and other spaces where Black folks interact with the police while trying to resist. So we're that's definitely on our radar, and we're pushing back against that as a collective, definitely.
I suppose that this coalition will also allow people to perhaps go to one place for information about the movement. For example, I'm always getting things from different places about what's happening and what to do. The parents of Michael Brown are actually asking everyone to observe a moment of silence this coming Tuesday, which will mark the second anniversary of his death in Ferguson at the hands of Darren Wilson. And that's 11:55, I think, a.m. Central Standard Time, right? And I got another post from someone asking me to, like, you know, boycott, you know, some social media and stuff. So, you know, it's fast and furious out there. And I certainly think that the platform is really impressive. And I just thank all the people who worked on it and released it.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that this platform is already playing out on the ground. I'm located in D.C. right now, but based in Chicago, and a collective called Let Us Breathe and BYP 100 has been occupying a space called Holman Square, which is a police site that has disappeared over 7,000 people, mostly Black people who've been arrested, but not booked into the electronic systems, and they're occupying Holman Square and reclaimed it as Freedom Square, and they will be occupying that space until the Chicago City Council recalls the Blue Lives Matter ordinance that has been introduced there on a city level. And they also have a petition going called the Bluest Lie that folks should definitely check out and sign at thebluestlieshy.tumblr.com. So there's a lot of different ways that this is playing out, and I'm really excited and hopeful about how we continue to build out campaigns and other actions and other things like that to really make this a reality.
Okay. Well, thank you, Janae Bonsu, National Public Policy Chair of BYP 100, and Jeremiah Lowry, labor organizer here in D.C. with D.C. for Democracy. And he'll stay with me to talk about the afterburn for Bernie Sanders supporters. Stay with us. Thank you, Janae. Thank you, Jeremiah.
Thank you.
The ground beneath my feet, I know was made for me. There is be what we want to be. And it's your world. It's yours and yours and yours and what you see. It was not meant for me. It's your world. But you don't have to be lonely, cause in your world you are truly free.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Well, here this week, there was a meeting called the Afterburn. Primary season is over, they say, but our movement continues. And they say, are you a believer in Bernie's platform? All politics is local, and Bernie's vision is possible and achievable on a local level. And my next guest is actually one of the organizers for that meeting, Raphael Mimoun, who volunteered for the Bernie Sanders campaign here in the DMV and is now continuing to organize for a revolution in politics. Good morning, Raphael.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And Jeremiah Lowry is hopefully staying with me on the line. He's, like I said in the last segment, an activist here in Washington, D.C., with D.C. for Democracy, and they work on issues related to environmental justice, creating solar co-ops in the city, universal child care, and public transparency. Thanks for staying on the line, Jeremiah.
Definitely. No problem. No problem.
Okay, so more than a week after the DNC, there are still very raw politics and some raw emotions among progressives. What kind of organizing is possible right now? It seems that a lot of people will still want to discuss the big question, you know, whether they will vote for Hillary Clinton or another party or start to build an alternative independent movement. Are people really ready to talk about local politics right now?
I think so. I think that it's our role as organizers to make sure that people talk about the issues. I think one of the amazing things about Bernie's campaign was that he talked about the issues. He didn't focus on personalities. He didn't focus on petty questions. He actually made sure that universal healthcare was on the table. He made sure that police brutality was being talked about. He made sure that all those questions that affect people's lives were being talked about. So a lot of people are still asking themselves, oh, should I vote for Hillary Clinton? Should I vote for Jill Stein? And those are personal questions that I can't help them answer. What we can help them do is think about how can we make those things that Bernie was putting forward happen here in D.C., in Maryland, in Virginia, and around the country.
Now, Jeremiah, I ran across online recently a group like People of Color for Bernie. And how do you see your work kind of intersecting with the Bernie Sanders campaign? And I suppose, you know, post-campaign, how you are, you know, connecting with this movement to move forward the issues you're fighting for?
You know, personally, I've done a lot of, like, I consider myself relatively young, but, you know, I worked on a lot of labor campaigns. I was the lead organizer for the Fight for 15 campaign here in D.C., the lead organizer for the Paid Sick Days campaign and Universal Child Care. I've been, active in the Universal Pay Leave campaign here in Washington, D.C., as well as a lot of public financing and open government campaigns. And so outside of candidates, you know, I've been working on a lot of these issues for almost a decade now. And so, I feel as though, you know, it was awesome that Bernie Sanders introduce, you know, his platform on a national level and even global level to a lot of, you know, young folks and folks of all different demographics who really bought into his message. And, you know, it's really exciting, you know. You know, outside of myself, you know, like one thing we can't forget, a lot of people have been fighting for Bernie's platform forever, you know. And so now it's an awesome opportunity to bring together those folks who've been working on Bernie's platform on a local level forever and folks who were really excited about Bernie's campaign and bring those two groups together and say, hey, you know, let's get this done in our communities. So,
okay. Raphael, I'm still thinking about some of the political considerations. It seems like we're really talking about, you know, having the maturity to know that it may take one election cycle, two election cycles, or more to really have the type of changes in the electoral process that we want. And are those gathered, do you think, committed to, you know, take that time? Or, you know, do you see the discipline there to and the foresight to take that time to build an independent movement and that focuses on these issues?
We definitely need to take our time and avoid getting too focused on the very short term. The problem often is that people focus on elections exclusively. And what we want to make sure is that people stay involved on local politics, on national political issues, even between elections. In this country, the presidential elections takes about 2 years, the campaign takes about 2 years. So for 2 years, people don't really talk about the issues. They focus on the elections. They don't talk about the reform that's possible, the reforms that are needed. So what we want to make sure is that people talk about those issues and even outside of the electoral process, stay involved. You know, go to hearings at the city council. They go down in the streets and make their voices heard. That they talk to their representative. They talk to their friends about those issues and make sure that we build the pressure on whoever is in office. And the important thing is that we will be supporting candidates here in D.C. at the local level, at the national level as well. But whoever is in office, whether it's our candidate or not, we will still be in the street, you mm-hmm. know, pushing for change.
You know, I'm just curious, Raphael, you know, coming from France, I know that you were a graduate student in Boston before you came here to D.C. And I know that the idea of social democracy and is not only accepted in France and other European countries, but socialism is also. I mean, how do you view this political process here? I know you just mentioned how it's taking 2 years to have a presidential campaign. But
yeah, I mean, we definitely have our challenges in Europe and in France as well. But there are certain things that are considered rights and that have been achieved many, many years ago. And that no politicians in the world would be able to take back. Universal healthcare, single-payer healthcare, is one of those. In France, you don't wait to be extremely sick before going to the doctor. You go whenever you feel bad because you know it's not gonna break your wallet. So there is definitely a lot to be done here that has already been achieved in Europe and in social democracies. But you know, I think the Bernie campaign showed us that there is the energy and there is the willingness to move in that direction.
Okay. Well, I want to thank my guests for this segment, Ralph Mimoun, who volunteered for the Bernie Sanders campaign here in the DMV and is now continuing to organize for a revolution in politics, and Jeremiah Lowry, organizer here in D.C. as well. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you. And if I can just add one thing, is that if you are in D.C., if you are interested in getting involved, we need anyone. Email us at revolutiondc2016@gmail.com, revolutiondc2016@gmail.com. We need you.
Okay. Well, thank you for adding that email, which I forgot to add. When we come back, as this country becomes more diverse, newsrooms are becoming less diverse. Stay with us.
We gon' be all right. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be all right. And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even boom with the face down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. But pretty Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangsta in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I'm going crazy. Trying to sign my papers all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know, even hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate poor, poor, when the killer's dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org. I'm Esther Avera. And what we have is Voices of Resistance from the nation's capital. As we are speaking right now, hundreds of Black and Hispanic journalists are meeting here in D.C. And with me in studio is media veteran Achille Ramses, executive director of the National Press Photographers Association, veteran photojournalist and media executive. Good morning, Achille.
Good morning.
Well, you're welcome. First of all, welcome to DC.
Well, thank you.
I know
glad
you're
to be here.
You're based in Atlanta right now.
Yes.
And we know that first of all, this convention marks many firsts in a way. I mean, it's the first time that the National Association of Black Journalists and the National Association of Hispanic Journalists are meeting together after several years of not having a meeting together.
This is true. It's been since 2008 when we had our last unity together.
Yeah, and I guess it's a little complicated because unity, as it was known, which was actually African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans, Asian journalists, and I think gay and lesbian journalists, that actually kind of lives on in another realm without the Hispanic and African American journalists. But that's getting into the weeds a little bit, I guess.
It is, and we are making strides of actually bringing a smaller formation of that through Unity Caucus. So there is a movement toward bringing all of these organizations back together again.
You know, I mean, and I guess it's so needed at a time when people of color, as I mentioned in the intro, are really under fire in newsrooms. We're disappearing rapidly from corporate media. And this is a time, it seems like, when people should come together.
Well, you're faced with the economic downturn and the recession hit our industry, along with the whole technology interruptions that has really impacted our industry. And so you've had shedding of staff. And of course, where we represent already, we've been at a stagnant, it's been estimated by the organizations, about 12.5%. We've been hovering for the last decade. Those numbers have not changed, but we have decreased on average about 3% in the last few years. And the greatest numbers, of course, are on the top leadership is key. We're losing veteran editors and veteran reporters, photographers, graphic artists, along all these lines. We're still maintaining, but it's decreasing ever. As staffs decrease, you know, minority representation is decreasing even in greater numbers.
And, of course, we know that the technology, the rise of the internet, and the economic downturn had this tremendous impact. But people of color have also been confronted with basic racism in the newsroom. You know, maybe, I don't know if there are panels on the at the convention about this. Is this something that people are willing to talk about openly in terms of sharing their stories?
I think so, because I think it's a lot more complicated than that. It's not just outright racism on a lot of levels. It's a much more insidious levels of racism, but it's also economic survival. So who are the people who are in charge and who makes the decision, who gets to stay, who gets to go?
Right. And who is valued?
And whose value and how is that value quantified? And so, and this is why a convention such as this, we have over, it's actually close to 4,000 members of combined organizations of NABJ and HJ are here for this convention. And what we like to be able to show is opportunities and people who are the skilled people who are there to do the work. We also have networking and educational opportunities that help development in our career. So we talk about these things. There are race panels we have at the convention where we're talking about the issues, what are impacting those decisions, and what is racism and which are economic issues, and how are those overlapping.
Now, the organization that you work with right now, National Press Photographers Association, I know that through that and perhaps with the NABJ, you've been doing a lot of training and mentoring of young photographers. If a listener right now is an aspiring photojournalist, what are some of the things that they should do?
Well, one of the first things I would ask them to do is to join the NPPA because we are an organization of career development and advocacy and education. We have several workshops and development and mentoring. We've just relaunched our mentoring program, trying to pair emerging journalists, student journalists, photojournalists, visual journalists, both print, broadcast, still photography, and videographers, multimedia producers, with veteran journalists to help them develop their careers. I would also, if they're a journalist of color, I would strongly urge them to join organizations such as NABJ and NHJ. We have a visual task force within the NABJ where we have a student projects where we actually have a living lab during the week of the convention, and students are producing online, print, and broadcast productions.
Wow.
They're reporting on the convention. Matter of fact, presidential candidate Hillary Clinton will be here this afternoon, so we have young photographers, videographers, and reporters who will be covering that as a real story that
okay.
they will produce.
Well, what I promise you is that I will look at some of those with you, and I will play a little audio from some of their coverage on next week's show.
That would be greatly appreciated.
So we are all about the voices of the people, and this is radio for the people. I've been speaking with Akili Ramses, Executive Director of the National Press Photographers Association, one of the thousands of journalists meeting at the convention of the National Association of Black Journalists and National Association of Hispanic Journalists right here in D.C. as we speak through Sunday, right?
Through Sunday.
Right. Okay. And I have run out of time. Thanks again to our guests today, Janae Bonsu of BYP 100, Jeremiah Lowry, Raphael Mimoun of After the Burn, Akili Ramses, award-winning photographer and executive director of the National Press Photographers Association. Thanks to Chantel James, Lydia Curtis, Michael Byfield, and Floyd DJ Waheed Aaron. Thanks to our engineer, Mike Nasella. And thank you for listening. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can listen to all of our shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On The Ground Show. I'm Esther Avaram. Raise your voice out there. Peace. Thank you.